This is LifeMint.com and you're listening to the Mint Editors Podcast with me, Nandita Mathur, and Mint's editor, R. Sukumar. Okay, the first story we discuss is on demonetization, which is still making the headlines. And
as long as you don't ask me what the rules are, because they keep changing them every day.
Yes.
There have been some changes overnight. For the benefit of listeners, we are speaking on Friday. And it's best that you, if you're listening to this on Saturday or Sunday, you cross-check the latest rules because they keep changing on almost a daily basis.
Right. So, Montek Singh Ahluwalia has written a very nice piece today on the good, the bad and the ugly, where he's outlining all three parts of demonetization and its effects on GDP, black wealth and so on. And like you said, the rules keep changing. So
yeah, I don't want to speak about the rules.
Mm.
I don't want to speak about the implementation other than to mention the fact that it is a complete mess.
Right.
Right? I mean, irrespective of what the government and the Reserve Bank of India may say, this implementation leaves a lot to be desired. So that's on one side. Our position as a newsroom has been always editorially in favor of demonetization because of... two big reasons. One, the move to cashless is good. Increases efficiency in the system over a period of time will also increase inclusion, although that's debatable. And it's traceable, right? Cashless transactions are a lot more traceable. So we are hoping that when people go cashless, more people come under the tax net.
Right.
That's one reason. The other reason is obviously the fight against black money, right? Which is a good fight, a fight that needs to be fought. India has a huge parallel and underground economy. Estimates of its size vary from $400 billion, which is 20% of the Indian economy, to $1 trillion, which is 50% of the Indian economy. Some people say it could even be bigger, but I don't know. So important that we get around this. And we are hoping that this is just the first step in that fight. And it will be followed up by a lot of other measures to prevent the generation of black money, right? Because what you've essentially addressed now is you've acted against what is called stock, right? Mm. Which is the amount of black money which is there with people in currency form, in cash form, not in currency form, in cash form. This was supposed to be, this is estimated to be around 6% of all black money, but fine, you know, 6% is not an insignificant number. You've acted against that. The long-term impacts are what are more interesting. And here the truth is, we don't know. We do know the short-term impacts. There will be minor economic trouble in terms of GDP growth this quarter and the next quarter. Mm. But what are the long-term impacts going to be? Is it really going to affect a behavioral change? Is it really going to prevent the generation of black money? Those are the kind of things that we need to look at. And as of now, it's still unclear. Right now, we are in a situation where the vast majority of people in this country seem to have enthusiastically accepted the demonetization drive, which is good for the government. It shows that they still have tremendous franchise. But we'll have to see how this plays out.
Same can't be said of the opposition because there's a complete disruption of parliament and, you know, so many bills waiting to be passed.
That's right, including the GST, the Unified Goods and Services Tax Bill. I'm hoping that some action will happen on it next week after the opposition has called for a huge nationwide protest on Monday. So I'm hoping that once that is done, they will move on to far weightier matters.
Right. So one of the companies that has had a windfall with as the country faces a cash crunch is, of course, Paytm. And they've introduced this points of sale and they've invested, Vijay Shekhar has invested some 220 crore in the company.
I mean, there are two parts to this, right? Mm. I mean, two or three parts. One is Paytm, the wallet.
Yes.
And that's seen significant change, everything else. The second one is what we've come to know this week about their plans for the payment bank. Now, the payment bank license, which was given by Reserve Bank of India, was given to the promoter of Paytm in his individual capacity and to his company, 197, which is the holding company of Paytm. So together, the two of them have invested in the payment bank. We had no idea how much each party had invested. We are now discovering that he seems to have put in the majority, 112, right? Or a little more?
More than that.
Yeah, crores. And overall, the investment is around 230 crores odd, which is a significant amount of investment in a payment bank. They were hoping to launch the payment bank by the end of this year, by November actually, which means they would have been well placed to take advantage of all these things that have happened. It's been pushed back. They're now looking at early next year. As for the point of sale app that they launched, they've withdrawn that. temporarily, simply because of some security reasons, because it requires, what it means is any merchant's phone can be converted into a point of sale machine, but it means entering your credit card number and your CVV and other details on the merchant's phone. There may be some security issues there, so they've gone back to the drawing board. I think they were probably in a little bit of a hurry to introduce this, given what has happened. I mean, you look at what's happened right now, no one was prepared for it.
True. And
these guys are basically trying to take advantage of what has happened. They're doing very well on the wallet front. The number of merchants, including small merchants, including small vendors who've signed up for Paytm in the last couple of weeks is huge.
True. Moving on, the other story is this report, Credit Suisse report, which shows that the richest 1% of Indians now own 58.4% of wealth.
And that this is increased from last year, right?
From 49%.
Yeah. Why are we surprised? India is an unequal nation. Everyone knows this. If you look at it in terms of Gini coefficient, which looks at how unequal it is reasonably high for a developing country. But this typically tends to happen also, to continue in the same vein, in a developing country, right? I mean, as a country becomes richer, as the per capita income grows, and the per capita income in India is now around $1,500, right? So we are not a rich country, we're not even a middle-income country, right?
No.
We're a poor country. But if you look at how this growth has happened, while some amount of this growth, because sometime back, the per capita income was much smaller, right? You must understand that the Indian economy has quadrupled in the last 18 years. So at one point in time, the per capita income was $800, right? From there, it's gone up to $1,500, which is almost doubling. Some of this doubling has happened because we have managed to move a significant number of people out of poverty, right? Despite the arguments over how many poor there are in this country. That's on one side. But at the same time, as usually happens when the economy is opened up and it becomes easier to do business, there is a certain segment which has done very well for itself. And this is really the capitalist class, which unfortunately must include all of us in this newsroom, I think, because we all work for a large company. And while journalists like to think that they're underpaid, they're still much better off than, let's say, people who don't have a regular job. Right? So I think the benefits of the changes that have happened over the last 25 years have accrued to everyone, but more significantly accrued to a small section of the population, which includes obviously entrepreneurs and businessmen, the promoters of companies, the salaried class, the so-called middle class, right, which actually is rich. Because even if you drive a small car in this country, if you draw a bell curve in terms of wealth, you would not be in the mean, right? You would be in the right asymptote, which means you are rich. But these people tend to define themselves as middle class. And then as you keep going, because the Credit Suisse report is actually about the super rich, and you look at the amount of wealth that is controlled by very few people, significant. Also, you must understand that some of this wealth is paper wealth. It's in stock, especially in the case of promoters of companies. So yes, it is real wealth, but it is stock.
So the story ends on this very funny note, which says that maybe our rich people need to try harder, because the top 1% in Russia own actually 74.5% of the wealth.
Yeah, Russia, of course, is very different, and especially because of the kind of changes that have happened there, right? I mean, it's moved from a from a socialist country to what is now a country which is still largely driven by oligarchs. So obviously one person there would control a lot more, which is what the numbers are showing.
The next story is about Flipkart, which is actually in talks, our story says, with investment banks to raise funds, probably because of competition from Amazon.
And also because I think the stakes are so much higher, right? Flipkart's valuation, and I'm going to take the last valuation at which a deal happened, was 15 billion. Sure, there may have been instances of some write down by some small stakeholders and all that, but this was the last valuation. So now you're going to go out and you want to raise money at that valuation. The numbers are big. The deal is big. Interest in India compared to 2014, the first half of 2015, has waned among many of these investors in e-commerce companies. So you now need to go out and construct a deal the way deals are classically structured.
Mm.
Who better to do it than an investment bank? It's still not clear whether they will sign up with an investment bank. They're exploring options. The names we mentioned in our article were Goldman Sachs and Citi.
Right.
Remains to be seen whether they'll go out and do it. Will they be able to raise money? I think they will, right? Because I think, again, I'm sorry to go back to demonetization, but before this demonetization shock happened on 8th, 9th November, I think the e-commerce companies in India had shown in the Diwali season, in the festive season, that they turned the corner, right? So the first half of this year was bad for a variety of reasons. The second half of this year was better. The festive season started off on a really good note. They all did well in the Diwali season. Subsequently, demonetization has hit them by a certain extent, especially because there are a significant number of transactions that happen on cash on delivery, and people are, and even people with credit cards and everything else, I think, are just deferring discretionary transactions now. Do I have scientific evidence for this? No. It's just a hunch, right? I mean, it's also behavior of people around me. But I have a feeling that this is temporary. It will move. E-commerce is one of those things that will continue to grow in India.
Right.
So it won't be difficult to find investors. You must also understand that India doesn't allow foreign direct investment in retail. So in many cases, any investment in e-commerce is actually a proxy investment in Indian retail.
Mm.
And given the number of consumers in this country, given the number of middle-class people in this country, given the number of rich in this country, and we just spoke about that, it would be very strange if people didn't want to participate in this retail market.
True. Right. The last story we discuss is again the Ratan Tata and Cyrus Mistry story, where so many sort of skeletons are coming out.
There's not much to discuss. I think both sides are now leveling allegations at each other. Not a day passes when a new allegation doesn't come out. We obviously publish some of these allegations after verifying them. Some of the others, which are of a more personal nature and are not really relevant, we don't really care about them. And on both sides, right? I mean, we don't have a dog in this fight. But I think it's, if either side thought the resolution would be quick, they were wrong. This is going to take a long time. It's a fight that's obviously going to happen at the level of shareholders, and it's also going to happen at the level of the courts, maybe.
Right.
Because both sides have hired lawyers. They've not filed any cases against each other. The number of people involved in it have obviously increased. Right. The Tatas are also fighting against one independent director, Nasli Wadia, who supported Mistry in a board meeting. And his contention is that as an independent director, he was just doing his fiduciary duty, right? And then you can't beat him up for being independent. So be that as it may, it's not going to end in a hurry. It's going to take quite some time. It's going to be very messy. Not good for the Tata Group. Already the kind of halo around the group is gone.
Right.
It's taken a beating. A lot of other traditional businesses are laughing because the Tatas always had this reputation for corporate governance and everything else, which many of the other family groups didn't have. So I think there's a lot of schadenfreude there. But it's also not good for India as a whole, because at the end of the day, Tata was probably the best known Indian brand outside this country.
Right.
Taken a beating. So we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
So those were Sukumar's top stories for this week. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at LiveMint on Twitter and Mint on Facebook. Thank you for listening, and see you next Friday.